Welcome back to Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong Visa Geezer.
Hello, Phil.
Good to see you. I've got a cracker for you. Last time we chatted, I talked about a same-sex couple who'd been married in another country.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Came here and they were offered that thing that you called a pipe and slippers visa. So first up, just remind me what that is all about.
Okay, well, same-sex partners who may be legally married in another jurisdiction or have a civil partnership in another jurisdiction. Unfortunately, like their heterosexual counterparts in Hong Kong, they can't get dependent visas. And dependent visas are residence visas, and it comes with all kinds of privileges, including the privilege to work and join in a business and to study and all that kind of stuff. If you're in a same-sex partner relationship, unfortunately today, dependent visas aren't available. So the only immigration status that a couple can get for the trailing spouse in this regard is the prolonged visitor visa, which, as you've couched
on the QT.
On the QT, on the not to QT, but certainly it's the slippers and pipe visa.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, this is based on a real couple, and they have lived here happily, carried on their lives. But now it's just about to go past the seven-year mark and the applications have been put in and it's gone right to the top because no laws have been broken and person B now...
The trailing spouse.
Trailing spouse has been here 7 years. So, you know, where do you go?
Well, this is one of the issues, right? Because in order to get the right of abode, which is in play here, you need to show that you've been continuously and ordinarily resident...
That's true.
..in Hong Kong for a period of not less than 7 years.
All on paper... kosher.
And the 7 years residence needs to be under a residence visa. Unfortunately, the prolonged visitor visa, by definition, isn't a residence visa. It's a visitor visa. And there are all kinds of sort of legal ramifications of possessing that visitor visa that makes it something less than a formal residence visa in terms of what the Immigration Department can and can't do or do and sometimes do and sometimes don't do in relation to it. So what you've got here is an application where a couple have essentially lived here for 7 years. One's been in possession of a residence visa and the other's only been in possession of the prolonged visitor visa.
Yeah.
Naturally enough, they both feel that they've taken Hong Kong as their only place of permanent residence. They've lived their lives as they have ordinarily been residents in Hong Kong. A candidate with the residence visa will be a shoo-in for the right of abode once his eligibility for permanent identity card has been verified. The other partner in this respect only has a visitor visa, and it's...
That's the only one he could have, right?
It's the only immigration status available to them, yes, unless he made an application subsequently for another type of immigration status to allow him to do other things. But just to be in a family relationship, this prolonged visitor visa is the only visa status that the Immigration Department in a position today, or at least for the last 7 years, have been able to give to this trailing spouse. So the question is... Will they both get the right of abode in this situation?
Well, one surely will.
Certainly, the one with the residence visa will, but the partner who's only had the visitor visa, whilst he has been essentially ordinarily resident, all things considered objectively assessed,
that's what I'm on about.
He hasn't had the immigration status, the underlying immigration status that allows the immigration department to denote that he's been resident because he's just been here on an extended visitor basis, essentially for the last, 7 years, which, given that the visas are only issued for 6 months at a time, he's had 14 separate six-month visitor visas. Query, does that amount to ordinary residence, all things considered, given that he doesn't have a residence visa, he's only got a visitor visa?
Yeah, but what happens when the immigration department, I'm sure this applies to quite a few people, actually, when the immigration department, I'm not saying they bend their rules, but they do an applied version of it, and surely if the answer was going to be no, they would have said no straight away to this, instead of which it's gone up higher than normal to be discussed.
Yes, and I suspect that the Immigration Department might be struggling somewhat with this from a policy perspective. They may, as you would say, on the QT, they may exercise a positive act of discretion in this instance and perhaps give it to him and hope that the problem will go away. Or they may determine that it's just way too big for them and it needs to be litigated and let the courts...
Well, that opens a massive can of worms, doesn't it, if it goes that high?
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, sure. The discretion thing's very interesting. So here we have a perfectly normal situation. No threats of aggro, no threats of embarrassment. You know, everything completely above board. Good boys. I'm wondering how far that arm of, what's the word? The wiggle room, if you like.
Room, yeah.
How big it actually is for this and similar kind of cases that go between the cracks.
Yeah, but I think it should be seen in the light of the bigger issue here, which is, you know, should same-sex partners who have been married in other jurisdictions, should they be eligible for dependent visas? As it gets to the heart of equality, and, you know, that discussion is ongoing. That debate is very much alive and well, and there's litigation in the pipeline presently as to whether or not a same-sex partner can get a dependent visa, recognising that they are legally married in another jurisdiction.
It's interesting because I think the line comes down, were you married somewhere else? Because, you know, the whole thing about Hong Kong laws, that's different. But their status is legally, you know, married.
Well, that's true, but the heart of the issue here is that the Immigration Department previously made a decision not to grant a dependent visa in that circumstance.
Because they can't. They don't have the tools to do it.
Well, at the moment they don't, that's correct. So in order to not to separate that family, they just gave the prolonged visitor visa, which is the consolation prize. Mm. And now that 7 years has trundled on, query people have got naturally questions that they need answers to as regards eligibility for the right of abode, and it seems that this one is playing itself through. I'll be delighted to hear more about it, Phil, as you do.
So something like this could become quite a test case. And again, it's not like you're doing it to show somebody up. You just want to live your life.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the Immigration Department exercises a positive act of discretion, you'll find that the issue just disappears and that will be the end of it. If the Immigration Department decide that this is too much for them to deal with and it needs to go to the judiciary, then, yeah, it will run and run and run, and it will be an interesting test case.
I think the last thing they probably want in the current climate is for it to go to the judiciary, as you say.
Well, at the end of the day, the Immigration Department should wake up and smell the coffee, right? I mean, it's time to afford same-sex partners equal status as heterosexual partners. If they're legally married in another jurisdiction, they should be recognised and should get dependent visas. This is year 2000. What are we in, 15 already?
This is why it is a bit of a test case, because in a way it's like a straight couple. You say, well, in theory, you could say, well, we don't think you're married, even though you're married in Spain. We don't think you're married because it doesn't, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Like you're married or you're not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's quite interesting.
Well, that's right. And so it comes down to political will at the end of the day.
Yeah, very interesting. If you've got any questions for Steve Barnes, it's morningbrew@rthk.hk. That was kind of a fiddly one, but particularly I think if you've just moved here or you're just not sure about something, drop us a line. You get much of those these days, the real simple ones.
Really shoe in, no questions asked, one set of papers into the Immigration Department, all boxes ticked before you even submit, and then it gets approved in 3 or 4 weeks. 2 or 3 out of 10, I'd say.
Yeah.
Most cases you have to work hard for.
I always say, even if you think it's simple, because people might think very often it's too simple and it's embarrassing and I can't ask him.
Well, that's true. The complicating thing about Hong Kong immigration is that whilst the rules and the policy and all the rest of that good stuff, the framework within which immigration is experienced is pretty well laid out and is pretty well understandable if you've got enough experience in it.
Yeah.
The complicating factors are the unique facts and circumstances
which
of each individual application.
Has that.
And you know what drives me nuts? After all these years of doing what I do with immigration here and publishing on it and all the rest of that good stuff, the visa gossip and the mill rumour that pervades around Hong Kong never ceases to amaze me just how sort of entrenched that is. By the same token, it's kind of understandable because, you know, you have yourself an experience with the Immigration Department and you think, okay, well, that was straightforward. It must be the same for everybody. So you parlay your experience to your friends and your colleagues and they go into these applications with the same expectation that it's going to be simple and easy. Yeah. But of course, you know, the circumstances and facts are always different and they're never, no two cases are ever alike. And before you know it, you know, I'm getting people sitting in my conference room saying, I can't believe I'm struggling with this because my friend.
Yeah,
course,
really.
Happens all the time.
I'll tell you where it's going to get worse than the one I've just been talking about. That is when you have a married couple from another country where the wife used to be a bloke.
Interesting.
Transgender issues.
I haven't seen that.
No, I'm sure you haven't.
I've seen transgender issues in Hong Kong. In fact, a lady that I went to law school with changed her sex a few years ago. So very familiar with that. And she's resident in Hong Kong. But from an immigration perspective, I think sort of I've seen it once maybe, but it's a long,
it's
long
fun
time
for
ago.
You this kind of stuff, but I think they'd have a cow, wouldn't they? Presented with that sort of
Well, that's right, yeah. As I say, I've seen it very, very rarely, but you know, occasionally it raises its head.
Let's go down a couple of gears and talk about a simple case of people married, want to come here, the usual thing, dependent visa, blah, blah, blah. Are there any little stumbling blocks with a B-flat marriage, an ordinary marriage case?
Yeah, I mean, quite, you know, interesting question that, because sometimes, and I've seen it a couple of times in the last year or so, where the one partner is working in Hong Kong and the other isn't yet working.
Right.
And one partner's salary might be, let's say, $32,000 a month. That's the working partner. But the rent that they're paying is $28,000 a month. And in that situation, the Immigration Department look at the earnings of the sponsoring employed spouse, and they say, well, you know, 32,000 income, 28 on rent, that's only got 4,000 to feed the two of you. No, we're not going to approve you. So I've seen two instances in the last 12 months of that, and we've ultimately gone on to get those cases approved by arguing historical earnings of the incoming spouse, who will be able to, is expected to earn similar amounts when they do get approved, because when they get the dependent visa, they are lawfully employable. And then you look to the totality of their savings and ultimately make the argument that they're not going to be a charge on public coffers, right?
That's the main thing, right?
That's the main thing. I mean, to get a dependent visa, the sponsor has to show that they can put a roof over the head of their spouse and they can put food on the table of their spouse, as well as show that the relationship is genuine, of course.
Yeah. A lot of stuff comes down to how much you earn in a certain amount of time, but many, many professions, you could earn very little one month and earn a one of the next.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, these straightforward applications can be a bit complicated, and you have to get down and
there
argue.
There are boxes for that on some of these forms, though.
No, and what's sort of, you know, sad about that is that the sort of distress that it causes to the couple, because they've got a reasonable expectation that they're going to be able to carry their lives on in Hong Kong. And if the Immigration Department are kind of, you know, faffing around with the income and the total amount of funds that are available to them so they don't become a charge on public coffers, it's disconcerting, and it can demotivate one somewhat.
Do you ever do any sort of regional research, how easy it is in other countries in Asia to deal with this kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, my specialisation is Hong Kong.
Surely,
and
yeah.
So I tend to sort of avoid learning too much about other jurisdictions. But anecdotally, I know what's going on in most of the jurisdictions. Sort of ums and ahs, really. The Australia, for example, make it easier for spouses to come in, and certainly same-sex spouses, considered.
Yeah.
Hong Kong has got a certain amount of flexibility to it. Rarely do you see, in my practice at least, do you see dependent visas getting denied specifically. But you find that those cases that do get denied usually come from people from the subcontinent who have got marriages and are in Hong Kong.
Because they don't believe them.
They don't believe them, number one, and normally the income levels are not that sufficient in order to sponsor. And I get questions through the blog quite often, actually, where the Immigration Department have had an application for dependent visa in the system for two and a half years, and they're not giving a result. Now,
what's that usually then?
Well, that's because they're kind of not really satisfied that the strength of the application is such that they can really get to the bottom of why they should approve. All things considered, there may be issues about identity, especially where there
are...
So
why sit on it, though? I mean, this is the thing that people criticise the entire...
Indeed. I mentioned the subcontinental marriages because there's a lot of arranged marriages, certainly in India. And part of the test for approval for dependent visas is to show that the relationship is genuine.
Yeah.
So if you've got an arranged marriage, how do you therefore, if you're the Immigration Department, prove that the relationship is genuine? What they tend to do is sort of take the view that love conquers all, right? So if 2 or 3 years have gone by and the application is still in, and there's evidence being generated that this couple, even though they're separated, are in a genuine relationship, even though it may have been arranged to begin with, through the passage of time, genuineness sort of emerges in the Immigration Department. They've then got what they need to give due consideration to them. But, very often that happens with Immigration Department. These applications.
This brings up another really interesting point, because not every arranged marriage is a tale of misery and woe, is it? I mean, some people are very cool with it, and it's just the way other countries do it.
Indeed.
It's not our cup of tea, but it's what they do.
Indeed.
So it's a case of these guys accepting other cultures, and we're back to where we started, really.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, in fairness to the Immigration Department, they can only process the cases with the information that they've got on hand. And if the information on hand suggests that the relationship is new, then whether you're from India or whether you're from, you know, Alaska, at the end of the day, you've still got to show that your relationship is genuine. So if the culture suggests that, you know, arranged marriages are genuine, well, OK, let's wait until, as far as the Immigration Department go, let's wait until enough... There's been a sufficient passage of time for the Immigration Department to be satisfied that, yeah, actually, this is now a relationship that is genuine for their purposes.
I suppose there's another just slight deviation from that as well, which isn't to do with culture. It's, you know, in the movies, you always see the guy interviewing a couple and, you know, they got together because the guy's gay and he wants a wife, all this kind of stuff. The Hollywood loves that, but that kind of thing must exist. I don't know if... they have much of a hassle with just a false marriage, a legal marriage, but one that isn't...
genuine.
Yeah.
I mean, do the Immigration Department have a problem
with
that?
Yeah, I wonder if there's much of that sort of thing here.
I haven't seen a lot of it, but I'm sure that...
it's cousin of arranged marriage, if you like.
People being people, I'm sure that there are people that, you know, do tread down that path, but I certainly haven't
You don't get many of these... I mean, I've been trying to do some extremes with you this morning, but the point is these do exist, maybe not in our little sort of X square miles, but it's a way of the world.
Well, it's the human condition, right? If two people genuinely want to be together, they're going to explore all legal avenues that they can to bring that about.
Mm.
By the same token, the Immigration Department are part of the Security Bureau. They've got to make sure that they know, you know, the bona fides of the people that they're giving residence visas to, and they want to, you know, tick all the boxes and be satisfied, all things considered, that we're safe as a result of the way they do their duties.
Yeah. Just before we wrap up here, there's one place we haven't talked about, and that's China. And I'm sure there are various cases to various degrees of the kind of thing we've been talking about coming from the mainland. Does that throw a spanner in their works?
Well, yeah. I mean, firstly, if you're a permanent resident of Hong Kong, you've got a mainland spouse.
That's right.
You can't sponsor that mainland spouse for a dependent visa. You've only got to bring the spouse in on the family reunion one-way permit system. And that's whether you're a Hong Kong Chinese permanent resident or a non-Hong Kong Chinese permanent resident. You can't sponsor Chinese mainland spouses. It's one of those rare instances, Phil, where if you are, and you have an immigration status that's less than permanent, your privileges are, and your rights are actually greater than if you are a permanent resident, but that's part of the floodgates policy.
Thanks for talking grey areas with us this morning, Steve. I think next time, if we remember to pick up where we left off and bring kids into the equation of the last thing you talked about.
You bet.
All right, then. Steve Barnes, Hong Kong Visa Geezer.